In Isaiah 53, there is no form or comeliness. That word comeliness, as we mentioned, some of your translations, there is, he has no form or majesty. Was there anything that the Jewish people were going to desire in that? Notice Isaiah 53:2 again. So he has no form or majesty, and when we see him, there is no beauty, there is no appearance that we should desire him. Did they want Jesus as king now? Whereas before in John chapter 6, they wanted him as king, tried to take him by force, making him king. But now notice in John 19 verse 5, behold the man. There's no form. He has no majesty. He has no appearance that the people would desire him. And so it's interesting. Some have come to Isaiah 53 verse 2 and have tried to say that, you know, when Jesus, you know, came, he wasn't a highly attractive individual. Have you ever heard that interpretation of Isaiah 53:2? I've heard it more times than I care to admit that I heard from others. And they would come to this and say, see, he wasn't going to look like much, but, you know, he might have been plain as soap, but he was going to be the king that God wanted. That's not at all what Isaiah 53 verse 2. I would actually argue quite the opposite of it, is that whenever they tried to make him king in John chapter 6, I think he was a rather attractive individual. There was certainly nothing that would have been off-putting as people try to apply this and say that, well, you know, some people would have just said Jesus was ugly. No, that's not what this is saying about his physical appearance coming into this world and whenever he is teaching. This context is Jesus as the suffering, sin-bearing servant. And so he's beaten. He has no appearance that they would possibly desire him. And so when we look at Isaiah 53, 2 and 3, keep in mind that the context clearly is Jesus coming out, wearing the crown of thorns, the purple robe. Can you imagine the crown of thorns? Do you think he has blood all coming down his brow and his face? And then he has been beaten? And some believe that the beating that he suffered very well may have been, you know, may have put some people to death. And that is my understanding. So he does not have anything attractive that the people would look for in a king. So I believe that that's the true context of a statement like John 19 verse 5. And I believe that that is one of the primary passages that would give us prophecy. Isaiah 53. Undoubtedly, this whole concept of the suffering, sin-bearing servant focuses on the beating, trial, and ultimately the crucifixion of Jesus. And so, what I want to do now is I want to look at some of the rest of these passages in John chapters 19, 20, and 21 as we wrap up our study and our discussion of the book of John. Notice, when you have, I wanted to mention John 18, verse 38, because this is a powerful point. Pilate, of all people, in interacting with Jesus, Pilate makes this statement, which I think sometimes we don't fully understand, perhaps, what he's saying, but let's try to put it in context. When Pilate said to him, "What is truth?" Because Jesus makes it clear that he came to bear witness of the truth. Verse 37. And he said, "Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice." Well, who would that naturally include? Certainly Pilate. So Pilate, in essence, if you're of the truth and you're a person who is wanting the truth, you're going to hear the voice of Jesus. So Jesus is saying, you're going to hear my voice. Verse 38, Pilate said to him, "What is truth?" Now I believe that this is within the context. Is Pilate of a cool, calm demeanor, or is this of, you know, he's very frustrated. He wants to set Jesus free if possible, but he's having to deal with, do I appease the people and crucify Jesus, but I find no reason for death in him? That's the dilemma. So I believe we're dealing with a very frustrated, a very uncertain Pilate. You know, First of all, he's not operating from a system of faith that believes that there's only one God, and the true God being the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. He's not operating from that perspective. And he's not operating from the perspective of God is going to send a Messiah and only one Messiah. He's operating from a perspective of multiple deities and gods and a son of the gods, as here he's being presented as made himself son of God. From Pilate's perspective, Jesus could have very well been a son of God, and his wife having the dream to not have anything to do with this righteous man. I think putting it all in context, what is truth? You're having Pilate in a position of not, first of all, I don't think he's operating at all from our perspective and from the true perspective of God's people of objective truth. He's operating from a perspective of subjective truth, but he doesn't certainly believe that Jesus needs to be crucified. But hey, if that's ultimately what it takes to satisfy the Jewish people, go through a hand-washing ceremony and, you know, I've washed my hands and I'm free from the blood of this righteous individual. And that is enough to salve his conscience. But what is truth? Notice on this, does he really want the truth? If he really wanted the truth, you would have had a completely different course of action. But this is where, you know, we sometimes say the rubber meets the road. So when it comes right down to it, what are we going to do with the truth? Pilate ultimately doesn't want the truth, does he? Because if he wants the truth, you're going to have to deal with the consequences of the truth, aren't you? Truth does bring consequences. There's an old saying, truth or consequences. Well, you know, we might even say truth and consequences. You hold the truth, there are going to be consequences. Now, let's turn. We've mentioned this passage before, but probably we can't mention it enough when we talk about the truth. Galatians chapter 1. Galatians chapter 1. Paul had to deal with this, and it clearly comes out, but it comes out more than once in the book of Galatians. The book of Galatians is a rather fiery letter, is it not? And he's dealing with some pretty fickle-minded people, as you read Galatians chapter 3, verse 1, which he calls them foolish. Oh, foolish or fickle-minded Galatians. And notice that, who has bewitched you? That whole terminology, you know, who's tricked you? You know, or seemingly put a spell on you that you should not obey the truth. And so he has a discussion about the truth there. But notice Galatians 1. Notice verses 6 through 10. Paul says, I marvel that you are turning away so soon from him who called you into the grace of Christ to another gospel or a different gospel, which is not another, but there are some who are troubling you, disturbing you, and are wanting to pervert the gospel of Christ. Then he says this, but even if we are an angel from heaven, preach any other gospel to you than what we have preached to you, let him be accursed. As we've said before, so now I say again, if anyone preaches any other gospel than what you have heard or you've received, let him be accursed. Then notice verse 10. For do I now persuade men? Do I persuade people? Or God? Or do I seek to please men? Am I seeking to please people? He said, for if I pleased people, I would not be a slave of Christ. So are we people pleasers, or are we people who want to please God and glorify God? And so Paul makes this contrast that, you know, there is that dilemma, but ultimately, what do I want to do? Well, that's what Pilate's having to wrestle with. Do I want to do what appears to pretty clearly be the truth here, that Jesus is not deserving of death, and so he should not die. He should not be put to death. But then all of this pressure, this external pressure, do I want to please the Jews? Ultimately, he decides to please the Jews. But you know, let's take another situation of an individual who was one of God's people. Actually, he was a leader of God's people. And who was that other than Saul? Saul, you notice what Saul said in the situation where, you know, he had a lot of pressure on him and he wanted to, you know, obey God. He wanted to obey God, but he also wanted to please the people. And when he's called on it by Samuel, and Samuel says, well, what is this bleating that I hear in my ears. And what does Saul finally say? He said, well, yeah, I didn't put everybody, everything to death as God commanded. I didn't do what God said. He said, I feared the people and obeyed their voice. Feared the people. Well, so we can give in to fear. You know, and sometimes that'd be fear of displeasing other people. And are we going to cave in our convictions and knowing what the truth is? And are we going to be like Pilate? And you know what? I'm going to have to let this one go, and I'll just step back, wash my hands of it. And if we're not careful, we do the same exact thing. Our time is already gone. Our time is gone. So as we just wrap up our study of the book of John, notice as we close, Jesus is going to say, John 19, verse 30, it is finished. It is completed. His work on earth, his earthly ministry, it was accomplished. So it was completed. And so this, I believe, actually serves as a victory cry, which this whole concept of victory we're going to see in the book of Revelation. And in John chapter 20, if you'll recall, remember our memory verse. Our memory verses, John 20, verses 30 and 31. Truly, Jesus did many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book, but these are written, that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you may have life in his name. Similarly, John closes on that note. John 21, verse 25, makes it very clear that if everything that Jesus did was recorded one by one, John says, I suppose that even the world itself could not contain the books or the volumes that would be written. And so as we've perhaps said before, that if everything that Jesus did was cataloged, perhaps the world itself would not have been a large enough library to have contained so many books. And look how many commentaries have been written just on what God has revealed to us and what God has preserved for us. And He has given to us in this, He's given to us all things that pertain to life and godliness. And so, the book of John. Why is John written? That we might hear the message, might believe the message, become obedient, and that we might have life. That's how John begins, that Jesus came and in Him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the purpose of Jesus' coming is that we might have life and have it abundantly. Have life, yes, to the best extent now, but more important than that, to have eternal life. That was the purpose of Jesus' coming. And if we fail in life to lay hold of eternal life, as Paul tells Timothy in 1 Timothy 6, verse 12, then we have failed absolutely and completely. You might be successful in all other exploits and all other endeavors, but if you fail in the most important mission, the spiritual mission of serving God and becoming obedient to the gospel all the days of our life, once we come to the truth, and if we turn on the truth, then we can throw it all away and we become the greatest failure, even though from a worldly perspective you might be the greatest success. And so it's been said that anyone can go to heaven who wants to go to heaven more than he wants anything else in the world. But no one can go to heaven who wants anything else more than he wants to go to heaven. You have to desire it with all your heart more than anything else in the world. If you're here today, if we can help in any of your spiritual needs, will you come as we